About 20 and a half minutes, if you want to be precise, past the hour on a Tuesday morning here along the Broken Road. Joining us now from Garden Valley, Texas, is Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist and, again, the only scientist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio. And he's a member of the board at Creation Moments. And, Don, how are things up Garden Valley way this morning?
Well, they're hot and dry. Actually running to another dry spell. We've been looking for some rain for a long time. We had a little bit about 3 or 4 weeks ago, if not longer, and then we haven't had rain since. So,
yeah.
Yes, I'm irrigating like crazy, the vineyard. It's a good thing that, you know, I have a pond to take some water out of.
Yeah, I'll ask you about that pond. That's a beautiful site you have for the winery there. And how's the water level on that pond right now? Have you noticed any drop in the water level?
Oh, my goodness. It's dropped at least 2 feet.
Okay.
Most of that is from evaporation, not necessarily from taking out the water from the pond, but it will... when the pond level goes down, you can be assured that the water table is going down as well, because the pond is spring fed, but of course it doesn't get fed when the underground spring is low.
I think this might be an appropriate time for you to begin a hunger stone of your own out there in that pond. What do you think?
Well, that's a great idea. I could probably, we've got plenty of stones around here. Of course, this part of Texas has a lot of iron ore. And up our little hill, our little slope, we've got plenty of pretty big stones. I can, I can put some stones around the pond where the water level is. And then I can mark the date on it, and then some little comment.
Kind of a horizontal line. Yeah, I like that idea. In fact, I got to tell you, though, it's not a new idea, actually, as you've told me.
What?
This would not be a first, Don. No,
not a new idea.
As a matter of fact, it's an old idea. And Don and I are looking at an article from the Smithsonian Magazine about hunger stones. And looking at this old stone with the carvings in it reminds me of my favorite graffiti story. I was standing in line at Winchester Cathedral one time. This was back about 1972. And up at the head of the line was the wooden throne upon which English royalty was coronated, has been for centuries. And as I got closer to the chair, I noticed it was all carved up. And I thought, how could they let this happen to a national treasure? That's terrible. It's going to fall apart. I mean, look at all these. And as I got closer and closer, I could begin to read those carvings. And the one that jumped out at me, it just said, and it was obviously graffiti, it just said, John Smith, 1728. And I had a whole new perspective instantly of what graffiti could do for you. It was a record of life back then. And these stones, these stones are much the same. Explain to us, what is a hunger stone?
Well, this, obviously we're having a little bit of a drought here in East Texas and other parts of the United States. Well, they're having the same kind of conditions in Europe as well. And there is a town in the Czech Republic, Deccan, if you will. And there's a river, an Elbe River, that runs through the town. And as the weather keeps drying out and there's no rain, it's exposing stones in the riverbed.
That's been the case this summer, too. It's been super hot in Europe, at least by their standards. And water levels are dropping. And what does this thing look like?
Well, apparently the stone, as the water level drops, different artifacts that, have been in rivers and things, and that's not just in the Czech Republic, it's actually all over Europe that these things are being revealed, in Ireland as well, and England, and Germany. There's a whole village that was exposed. But the interesting thing about the stones that are being uncovered in the Czech Republic is that these stones, of course, have inscriptions on them, and most of them have the date marking the kind of the location. Okay, the water level was here on such and such a date, and the oldest dates go back to 1660 so far. This one particular stone is called the Hunger Stone because it purports that, oh my gosh, we have, you know, this we have such a drought, and it's we've had a bad harvest, lack of food, high prices, and hunger for people. And then the last inscription on it says, "When you see me, weep." So I guess the fellow who actually put the stone there was using his last bit of energy to carve this in the stone, and he must have been very, very thin at the time. Anyway, it's become a landmark in the Czech Republic. And a lot of visitors, because they built the dam and diverted some of the water, you can see this stone about a third of the time during the year anyway. And people come there to kind of marvel at this stone that, oh, there's been, you know, droughts in the past, and this one happened to be, you know, prolonged, and there was great food shortage, and that, of course, you know, created higher prices, the law of supply and demand, and the poor people were getting hungry. And he apparently might have been one of them. So
could have been. And I'm looking at this photo, and I'm going to post a link to this article in our chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com in just a moment here. But this is not a little stone. This is a boulder, and I see nothing to clue me as to the scale, other than the inscriptions, the engraving on the rocks. And I'm figuring this probably is 3 or 4 feet wide, and maybe 3 feet tall. And I'm reading inscriptions and water levels. Whoever's been doing this, it must be a tradition. And I don't know that this records every drought in the history of Europe, but I'm looking at a horizontal line. The lowest level, 1921, is the date on it. And then I go back to 1842 and maybe 1810, 1790, 1776. And the oldest date I see is 1616. So I'm just thinking about the community of knowledge that this rock, this stone, this boulder represents here. I mean, it's more than just water levels and a record of repetitive flooding and presumably famine times, especially with the older readings. But this is a record of human history, isn't it?
Well, it is. And especially, you know, in that part of Europe. It tells us a number of things, actually. It tells us that, hey, you know what? There were droughts back in history. And, you know, a man probably had nothing to do with it. Back in 1616, it's not like we had all the fossil fuels that we have today, supposedly creating a CO2 covering over the earth, thereby increasing the temperature. And so man wasn't responsible for the droughts back then. And so all this hullabaloo about climate change, oh, we've got major problems with climate change today, we got to do something about it. This has been going on, you know, this particular record goes back 250 years. And we still have those droughts back then, as recorded on these rocks, was even longer and worse than what we're having today. So the global warming, if you will, or the change, you know, they changed the name from global warming to climate change because it was getting cold, you know, in the middle of the global warming. It got colder than it had been in a very long time. So they said, we can't call it global warming anymore. We call it climate change. And as we've talked about many times on this program, you know, scientists really, if a climatologist is really honest with himself, they really don't know what's causing the heat up. Of course, the government wants to, blame it on human activity. And maybe there's a small impact on the climate, based on global activity. But, the major impact is the sun. And when there's more, hot spots on the sun, things are going to heat up because there's more energy being, being spewed our way, mm-hmm. if you will, from the sun. But everything from volcanic activity to solar activity and various other things that contribute to a greater extent, if you will, to climate change here on Earth is, more responsible for what's happened. And this is just another example that, hey, the climate has been going back and forth for a number of years. And this is a record going back 250 years of these similar changes.
Well, there's one comment in the paragraph here. It says that as bad as these recent droughts have been, they have not been as long or as severe as some of the historic droughts that have struck Europe over the past 250 years. So this is nothing unusual. It's just that in our perception and with the speed of media these days, news travels fast and all of a sudden we're suffering and it's way above normal and we've got, maybe 200 years of weather records at most to draw from. And so we figure this is unusual. Well, the longer view of history says, no, this is the way it is. Climate changes, and it gets hot, and it gets cold, and it gets wet, and it gets dry, and that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, this is just a written record, albeit carved in stone, that's the way history has been. So why are we getting so upset about it, now? We're a little bit uncomfortable. I'm a little bit uncomfortable here in East Texas at the moment. Mm-hmm. But, last year we had more rain than we know what to do with. So, these things come and go, and I don't, there's no pattern to it. Now, back in 2011, when we planted our vineyard, we had 3 years in a row with the type of heat we're having this year and the type of drought we're having this year. Does that mean, in another, we're going to have another 2 years of this? Probably not. Probably, it'll start raining and things will get back, in quote, to normal, whatever normal is. Mm-hmm. But, that's the whole point. I mean, we call normalcy that which we like. Sometimes, and not necessarily reality. And, the fact is that the climate, this year it's warm and dry. Last year it was wet and muggy, and, next year may be a very pleasant year. I mean, I don't, these things change, and the climatologists don't have the models yet to include every aspect of the climate. It is so complex to be able to model it and accurately say, the temperature is rising by, it's going to be rising by 10 degrees over the next 20 years. Well, that prediction has certainly fallen way short, if it has risen a degree. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the other question, how much of a change is significant? I mean, how do you measure that in the short term? If you were able to read records that go back 1,000 years, it might be significant. But 100 or 200 or even 300, the averages just don't mean much. They're still,
yeah.
And I'm going back to my days of statistical analysis here in college and learning what statistics can do. And they can inform, but it can also grossly mislead.
Well, that's right. And we don't have the data. I mean, quite frankly, we don't have the data going back. I mean, how hot was it back in 1616? The earliest recording on these rocks. I mean, obviously it was warm. Obviously there was, little rain. But how warm was it? There's no written record. So, you can't extrapolate back, then to say, oh, it had to be, so warm. Now, lack of moisture, you probably could do something with that to figure out, you know, kind of an average temperature as to how hot it had to be. But you've got so many other variables. I mean, the wind's blowing off the ocean or blowing, you know, into the ocean, as it were. Because if you have, obviously, if you have moisture coming from the ocean, you're going to get precipitation. But if the jet stream kind of changes and that moisture that usually comes in doesn't come in, or in this case, as here in the United States and here with what's happening to Texas, the Gulf Stream, for example, is being pushed eastward. And so, you know, the Carolinas are getting all kinds of rain. The east part of the country is getting more than their usual share of rain because of the Gulf Stream, you know, being pushed over. And here, you know, in Texas, we're not seeing a whole lot of it as we normally do. But does that give us the ability to say what's going to happen next year? You know, no one knows, which is the major point here, that we can't tell what's going to happen next year. We hope that we get some rain here in the winter to fill up my pond again. But
Well, of course, science has devised ways other than accumulated data to try, or rather they have found ways to find more data, because science is good at doing that. And we've talked about this on programs in the past where there are cores of ice cores where they drill deep and get out a long column of ice or earth or sand or sediment, something, and then read from that the history of hundreds or even thousands of years ago. But those findings are reliant on certain assumptions that science has made, and they've continually made bad assumptions, haven't they?
Well, they have, and you know, they claim that these ice cores, you know, can go back millions of years, and they can look back into millions of years of Earth history. Well, we know as creation scientists, and those of us who believe in a global flood and all of the catastrophes that was happening at the time of the global flood, that you know, each of the dark layers in these ice layers were probably not caused by a year, for example, but were probably caused by volcanic activity that was happening at the time of the flood. So you had tremendous amount of snowfall that was happening because the waters were warmer and then the land was cooler, which was conducive for having a lot of snow on the land. And then with all of the volcanic activity, as the continents, as we've talked about before, were breaking up, or the main Pangaea, for example, was breaking up into the continents that we have today, tremendous, tremendous volcanic activity. It wasn't all going on at the same time, but there was periods of very, very high volcanic activity, which was spewing all kinds of volcanic dust into the atmosphere. And then there were periods of not so high. And so you have a lot of dust being settled on the snow, which is laying down these layers within the snow, which then becomes the ice cores that they're taking. And the interpretation that each layer is a year has absolutely no meaning in that regard.
So one of those assumptions is in regard to geologic time. They would look at a layer and say, oh, that's 1,000 years, when it might have been a season. And there's no way to tell that looking back that far in time. In fact, I think it's apparent, and we've discussed this again many times, that the biblical creation paradigm better suits the data than any other explanation that science has been able to come up with, to devise.
Well, and that is you know, the main point, that we can rely on Scripture, we can rely on the description that the biblical history, I mean, the first parts of the Bible are a written record, and that includes the global flood and what was happening with the civilizations before and after the global flood. And it doesn't give us a complete record that, oh my gosh, we had 800-foot, you know, tsunamis at the time of the flood, but we can look at the geological data and say that we've got this you know, these mudslides, if you will, the, covering most of the Earth, in the layers are very, very similar, regardless of the where, you know, on the Earth that you, you know, go. And so, therefore, you have to conclude that there was a major, major catastrophe, that there was multiple, you know, waves of huge waves of water that covered, you know, most of the Earth, if not all. I mean, the Bible says all of the Earth was covered at the time. And laid down these multiple layers, and it's logical, because the layers are thicker on the coast than they are in the inner parts of the United States, for example. But we have layers that come here in Texas and in Utah and you know, further north, that all that is from the same type of material that was laid down. You can't just ignore this stuff and say, oh, you know, that was just laid down over millions and millions of years and, you know, deposited like that, when we have a kind of a microcosm, actually, from Mount St. Helens that shows us that these mudslides, for example, even from just one little volcano, well, it wasn't so little, but, you know, one volcanic, you know, eruption a frozen lake up at the top of the crater on Mount St. Helens comes sliding down, and within a day creates, the layers of mud that are hundreds of feet thick. The layers of mud are striated. So it depends on the speed of the water and the particles mud and earth that are in the fast running water will determine what gets laid down first. Obviously, the heavier stuff's going to get laid down, and the lighter stuff is going to get laid down, you know, later. But we've got these little experiments, if you will, natural experiments that says, hey, whatever happened to the Earth a long time ago, it had to be a tremendous cataclysmic event that pretty much wiped out everything on the face of the Earth, from with regard to the animals that live on the Earth. And that's the exact record that we have in the Bible.
You know, I've heard it said too, and maybe you can speak to this, that the book of Job may contain a reference to an ice age. And what do you know about that?
Well, I haven't read Job in a while, but it is possible. You know, there are, certainly Job experienced large animals, because as we have in chapter 40 and 41, chapter 40 talks about the behemoth, which is a sauropod, or like a brachiosaurus. They don't call them brachiosauruses anymore, but anyway, a long neck animal with huge legs and the big tail, that kind of lived in the swampy areas. And God asked Job, consider my behemoth, and describes this particular animal, which was obviously huge. And then in Job chapter 41 talks about the Leviathan, which was a fire breathing dragon that lived in the waters in the ocean. So you know, we have Job, we have evidence of, in a quote, dinosaurs, that man not only lived with dinosaurs, that Job had to consider in order to consider his plight in front of God, you know, at the time. And God was making the point, can you do this? And Job had to say, you know what, no.
as well as references to ice and snow in that, and that's not very common in the Bible.
That's true.
It's not very common throughout the Bible, and scholars have determined, again, as I've heard, that Job is probably the oldest book of the Bible, though nobody knows the author or exactly when it was written.
Yes, no, and I've heard that as well, and it is, you know, we often think that Genesis is the oldest book in the Bible. Well, no, we know that Moses wrote, you know, at least most of Genesis. Maybe he didn't write the earlier chapters, or maybe he was kind of transcribing what Seth, for example, one of Adam's sons, was you know, telling the story of carrying the history, if you will, of early man as given initially by God to Adam. But Job, obviously, from the things that are in it, it makes it sound like it is the oldest book. And just because it's not the first book in the Bible doesn't necessarily mean it's not the oldest book. Mm-hmm. But scholars have pretty much patched together, I think, that Job is the oldest book.
We started talking about hunger stones, and we've kind of gone up some rabbit trails, but it all works together to emphasize that the biblical story of creation ought to be a major factor in any scientific consideration of how the earth has developed over the years and for how long. If you're listening this morning and you can get to brokenroadradio.com on your cell phones or your computers and check on that link, you can see what this hunger stone looks like and read more about it. It's an interesting story, and we're thankful for Dr. Don to bring that up to us and alert us, point us to it today, because there's a lot of good information there, some real history and more than a little bit of science. Don, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate every Tuesday coming by, and we'll leave you to tend your grapes now.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and it's been a pleasure as usual.
We'll look forward to next Tuesday.
Yes.
Bye-bye.